On this week's episode, well, we never go anywhere without our lobby boy. Now grab your tickets, because we're getting to the theater. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Getting to the Theater. I'm Adam.
I'm Erica.
I'm Etta.
I'm Jeremy.
This week, we're talking about 2014's The Grand Budapest Hotel, directed by Wes Anderson.
Oh, God, I love Wes Anderson so much.
You've seen almost all of his movies, haven't you?
I've seen all of them but two.
Two?
Oh, now one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen everything except for his first one.
Is that Moonrise Kingdom?
No, I've seen Moonrise Kingdom. Moonrise Kingdom came out like 2010, 2011?
Oh, okay.
The only one I haven't seen was, I think it's like The Boat something. No, that's Aquatic, Life Aquatica, which I've seen.
I've seen part of that one.
I used to have it on DVD back in the day.
So you picked this movie. Can you give us a brief description of what this movie is about?
It's about a hotel owner that likes to fuck old ladies and then somehow ends up in a murder mystery.
That's what really happened here.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that going in.
I did not think it was going to be a murder mystery.
No. I thought it was just going to be like an open door farce where people come in and out of the hotel. Ralph Fiennes. Playing the crazy hotel concierge. Monsieur Gustav.
Bottle Rocket.
Oh, that's his first movie?
Yeah. 1996.
Oh, I've never even heard of it.
Owen Wilson's in it.
I'm shocked. Owen Wilson's in all of his movies.
Him and Bill Murray.
Mm. But this was an interesting pick. It was a funny movie. I liked it.
Oh, yeah. Did y'all like it?
Yes.
Yes. I was very excited when you picked it because I was like, oh, this is right up her alley with the murder mystery. I was like, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. It's going to be good.
I was tricked.
You were tricked?
Tricked out.
I didn't know what the movie was about at all. I went in completely blind.
Oh.
At least you knew it was about a hotel.
Yeah. Yeah. I hoped it was about a hotel.
Unlike a different movie that Jeff Goldblum is in called Hotel Artemis, which is not about a hotel at all.
Is that a good movie?
It was okay.
Is it a Stay Tuned?
Could be.
Oh.
But in this movie, you have several different time periods that the movie takes place over. So you have the main setting of the movie is 1932, which is a flashback. It's basically...
It's a flashback within a flashback, I would argue.
Within a flashback?
Yeah.
Because if we just get into it, the movie opens with a young lady going into the old Lutz Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a statue there of someone that just called Author. And on their headstone, it's got a bunch of key hooks. Like you would see in a hotel where they have all the room keys.
Mm-hmm.
And it flashes to 1985.
Well, don't we see that the girl's holding a book?
She's mm-hmm. holding a copy of the Grand Budapest Hotel, yeah.
Yeah.
Then it flashes back to 1985, where we see Author still alive, played by Tom Wilkinson.
Was he in?
He's in your favorite Mission Impossible movie. He's in Ghost Protocol. He's the one that gives Tom Cruise... the mission in the car when you first meet Jeremy Renner, and then the car gets destroyed and Tom Wilkinson gets killed.
Yes.
Yeah. He's also the mob boss in Batman Begins.
Falcone?
Yeah. The one that goes to the mental hospital because he pretended to slit his own wrist to avoid jail, and then Scarecrow uses the gas on him.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. I need visuals. I'm not good with names.
Yeah, I don't remember.
He unfortunately just died not too long ago.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
Oh, the actor?
Yeah, the actual actor, Tom Wilkinson. He just died this year.
Fuck.
Of COVID?
That guy. Okay.
So he's basically doing a monologue, and you can hear a door open, which is kind of funny. And then you just hear, he just goes, he's like, no, don't. And a little, like his grandson is playing with a toy gun, and he shoots him with a toy gun. But he's basically saying, the story I'm about to tell you was told to me the exact same way many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Then it goes back to 1968. So we go from presumably what could be present day to 85. Now we're back in 68.
I like to point out that that kid is just like, when it, before it goes to that flashback, he's just holding a gun at the camera. Like we're being held hostage in the situation.
Right. He also goes up to Arthur and he's like, sorry. Yeah. Like whispering while he, while Arthur is in the middle of talking, the kid's like, sorry. He goes, it's fine. But we go back to 1968 and we see young Arthur played by Jude Law. Mm-hmm. And I like that he kept the same outfit. He still got that safari-ish kind of wardrobe on when he's the old man.
He found a look and was like, I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah, yeah, he stuck with it. There's a lot of miniature work here because it shows the city that the Grand Budapest is in. You see the Grand Budapest on top of the hill by the mountain. Mm-hmm. And it's all miniatures. You got the little cable car thing that brings VS up to the hotel.
Well, it probably saved money because I know these sets cost. Like, had to cost money.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially just the hotel in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. The sets are great, too.
Yes.
So that's all that stuff is, like, miniatures and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm. The very opening like that. It also shows that, like, the Grand Budapest used to be this big, beautiful, colorful hotel. It looked like a, honestly, it looked like a birthday cake.
The way it was pink, it looked like Harry's birthday cake.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it was pink and it had the white detailing. It reminded me of a cake. But now it's all gray and drab and it's the 80s, so it's really boring.
What's the 60s?
Oh, the flashback. Yeah, sorry. Mm-hmm. 60s. You're right.
Yeah, it's like gray and yellow and green and...
Ugh. Yeah, it doesn't have any of that flair that we see it throughout the rest of the movie.
Glad we have more colors now.
Yes. Yeah.
But he mentions that he's friends with the current concierge at the hotel. Guy named Jean.
Played by, is that Jason Schwartz?
Yes, that's Jason Schwartz. Yeah. And he's very lackluster. He like is smoking a cigarette, and when he sees someone coming, he puts the cigarette out and puts the unfinished cigarette in his pocket.
To bring it back though, Jason Schwartz was the son of the girl from Rocky.
Tilly Shire.
Yes. Who was in Godfather.
There you go.
Yeah. Yep,
that's his mother. They know, and I think this is the part where Arthur, he notices an old man sitting in the lobby, and Jean is like, you don't know who that is? That's Mr. Mustafa. He owns this hotel. And the old man kind of turns and looks at them, and he's like, are you staring at me? And he lifts his glasses up, and they both have to kind of act like, no, we're not. Look down at your feet. Look up at the ceiling. Look anywhere but at this old man. And he mentions in this opening bit about how the hotel didn't have its formal, it no longer had that glory that it used to, and that inevitably it will be demolished.
Because it's so old? Or because people aren't coming?
They never specified, but it just, we know that sometime between this 68 flashback and the 58 opening, the hotel was torn down.
Aw. But, like, you can kind of see it's definitely only out. The only people that, like, visit there seem to be just old people in Jude Law.
Yeah, because, wow, my voice cracked.
Oh.
But
I'm
when,
glad you're finally going through puberty.
Finally.
I was trying to think of his reason for going to that. I thought there was a reason for him going.
Jude Law?
Yeah.
I thought he's just traveling because he's an author. He's trying to...
I gotcha.
Writing inspiration.
Yeah.
But he did mention that, like, everyone who stays there, it's kind of like... It's more like a long-term living, because they all kind of knew each other. They all had kind of a rapport, he mentions.
Yeah.
Except for when Mr. Mustafa showed up, he seemed kind of out of place, because they didn't really know him.
Because he said he stays there like 1 week out the year?
He stays there about three times a year. Mm. About three times a year.
Okay. For a week.
For about a week. Always in the off-season.
Okay.
And in the servants' quarter.
Yeah, he stays up in that small room, and he's like, yeah, he stays up in this top floor in the servants' quarter with no bathroom and everything. And Arthur's like, that's kind of fucking weird. Oh, but also in this moment when we meet concierge Jean, you can see a painting behind the concierge desk with the keys. Mm-hmm. The boy with apple painting, which is very important through the rest of the film.
Mm-hmm.
But when we watched it the first time, I didn't really pay any attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
Jude Law goes to the... Oh, I'm sorry. Before that, when he first mentions Mr. Mustafa, it shows, like, a flash of some newspapers that show, like, how he kind of got his wealth and where he came from. And I paused it this time watching it. One of those newspapers mentions that his wife and child died.
Oh.
Damn.
But if you're watching the movie in the theater, you'd never catch that because it goes by so fast.
And yeah, I didn't catch it.
Yeah, there's like four columns of text per newspaper, and there's three different newspapers. Author meets Mr. Mustafa in these, like, spa baths, almost, in the hotel.
Which, why?
The hotel's run down at this point, and they have that brief conversation right here, but he's like, he mentioned something about they're too expensive to keep up for today's tastes.
But, like, why would you want to, like, hang out in a bathtub with other people? I mean, like, I guess like a hot tub. But, like, I'd rather be in the same hot tub, not an individual hot tub next to other people in their individual hot tub.
Did they have a setup like that was it Shanghai Noon or was it? No, I think they were just in a fucking bathroom.
With a bathtub?
Yeah,
with multiple
Jackie
bathtubs?
Chan and Owen Wilson were like in bathtubs in the same like bathroom.
I thought those were just bathtubs.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. Maybe they were just bathtubs, but then I guess they were like small hot tubs or something.
It was like your own little personal spa tub.
It was interesting.
Yeah,
I think if the room had been in better quality, it would have probably been a nicer setting. But it's just the fact that the hotel is starting to become run down.
It's still weird.
I didn't think it was that weird, but also moment is in the 60s and the hotel was built long before the 30s probably. So I mean, whatever people did back in the day.
Take baths together but not together.
Why are you over there in your own tub? Come get in my tub.
Exactly.
Our feet can touch.
Exactly. Making a nice little intimate moment.
But Mr. Mustafa basically talks to our author right here and he tells him.
I like how he just kind of pops up to me. He's like, hey.
Yeah. He just comes out of nowhere like, I like your work. I mean, your writing, not what I saw get into the tub. And author basically is like, can I ask how you bought this hotel? And Mustafa does a funny thing where he kind of like dips out of sight for a second and you can hear some water draining. You don't see what he's doing.
Yeah.
And he pops back up real quick and he goes, I didn't buy it.
Yeah. Which was also a little weird because, like, after that, I was like, oh, is he just going to step up and we're about to see his whole junk? Which wouldn't have been out of, you know, the possibility because, like, 2 seconds later, they flash this guy getting hammered with a hose and sees all his ass.
Oh, I forgot about that guy. Yeah. And he's enjoying the hell out of himself, too.
Yeah. Having a good old time.
He's just singing.
They were blasting him with that hose, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
He turned around. He was going to be hurt.
Uh-huh. Claim me.
I was like, is this a prison?
Yeah. But Mr. Mustafa, whose first name is Zero, he tells Author, you know, to join him for dinner that night, and he'll tell him the whole story. He orders a bunch of stuff at the dining table, and he's like, good, that should give us enough time to talk. And it flashes back to part one. Now we have M. Gustav.
Wait, circling back. Y'all think his name is actually Zero? Or you think it's like a name he, like, took up because he lost, you know,
this is probably everything. A name he just took up.
Yeah, I imagine.
Okay. I highly doubt his name is Zero if he was from... Well, I don't remember where he...
This whole movie is nothing but fake countries.
Al-Jabop.
Yeah. Yeah, nah.
I love that later when he does say the name of his country, that Ralph Fiennes recites it back perfectly. They speak so fast in some scenes of this film, I had to turn on subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
Because the stuff they were saying was just coming out so quickly, I wasn't catching any of it. Granted, a lot of it is just made up nonsense, like every country name.
Yes.
That's why I always have subtitles on.
Because you can't hear the movie otherwise?
Exactly.
Speaking gibberish. So, yeah, Zero's probably not his real name, but I would be willing to bet Mustafa is his real last name.
Yeah.
This is, I don't know if I mentioned it, old Zero is played by F. Murray Abraham.
Mm-hmm. Aging well. Is he still alive?
F. Murray Abraham?
Yeah.
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah. Good for him, because he was old.
I mean, this movie is 10 years old.
Huh.
Young Zero is played by Tony Revoli.
Yeah, Revolori.
Revolori, and we've been calling him Tony Ravioli.
Yeah,
would.
I was like, it's around there. I was like, Ravioli?
And... Yeah, we were in the car. We were like, who's in this? And I was like, oh, it's Tony, what's his face from Spider-Man? I don't know, Tony Ravioli. It's Tony Revoli or something like that. Rovololi? That's not right. But either way, he's good in this. He's good in
his
douchebag character in Spider-Man.
This is one of his first roles. He's 18 in this movie.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. I think it's his fourth movie overall, but I think it's his biggest role at that time.
I mean, hell, I'd say he's one of the two main characters of this film.
Definitely. Yes, he definitely got a lot of the screen time.
Oh, absolutely. we're back in part one, 1932, is where we first meet Ralph Fiennes as Mr. Gustav H. He's getting this room ready. He's telling the people, you know, bring the table in, bring in the tray, put it on the table, give me the tickets for this. You do that, you go stand in the corner. And this is where we meet Madame D, who is played by a incredibly old-looking Tilda Swinton. Got her in so much makeup, I didn't recognize her.
I did. The problem, like, she looked old. She still moved like she was young.
Jeremy also recognized her. I did not.
Yeah, Jeremy recognized her immediately.
Yeah.
I only recognized her because I knew who she, I knew that she was playing this old lady in this film. Other than that, I wouldn't have known it was her.
Right.
But she mentions to Gustav that she's scared to travel, and she feels like this is the last time she's going to see him.
Mm-hmm. Well, she wasn't wrong.
No, she's not. But she has this great, great little scene with him, and she's like, he tells her, you know, you're going to be fine, you know, we're going to see you soon. And she says, come with me. And he goes, to fucking Lutz? his casual swearing in this movie is so good. He throws out all this random shit periodically through the movie, and it's just so perfect.
So bougie.
But I
like how she's like, I'm scared to travel, and she's like, hold my hand, and he holds her hand, and she's like, your nails look fucking horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
She's like, oh, you don't like it? He goes, it's not that I don't like it, it's making me physically repulsed. And he pushes her hand away. But he goes down the elevator with her, and she's like still saying she's worried, and he's like, oh, shush, quiet. And he starts reciting poetry to her, which he does a lot in this movie. He gets her in the car, and she's like, ooh, take this coin and go have a candle lit for something.
Which is like the world's giantest coin. It's like an oversized quarter.
And he takes it, and she's like, I love you. He goes, I love you. Now get out of here. And he tells the driver to go.
Mm.
And he says to Zero something about how it's amazing having the loyalty of a woman like that for 19 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I've never seen her like that before. She was shaking like a shitting dog.
Good God.
I fucking love that. And he gives Zero the coin. He's like, and he says all this very quickly. But he basically tells him, go down, buy this certain length candle, take it to this place, light it, go to Mendel's?
Yes.
The bakery. Get me a chocolate. Come back here and give any of the change you have left over to the crippled shoeshine boy. And it shows the little kid. He's got a leg brace like Forrest Gump.
Yes.
He's got these big glasses and he's shining someone's shoe.
Yeah.
And then he's like, wait a minute. Come back here. Who are you? Who hired you? I'm Zero. I was hired by Mr. I can't remember the character's name. But basically, Gustav is like, well, prepare to be interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, it's really funny though, because he's like, I was hired by this guy. And then like it pans up to the window. The window's open. The guy's just shouting down at them.
Yeah.
He shouted his name.
Yeah.
He's like, I was hired by such and such guy. He's just like, guy just shouts his name. And the guy just comes out the window. And I'm like, how did he hear him?
He was ready. He's like, oh, Mr. Gustav might need me.
Yeah, Gustav yelled. And he's like, oh, hold on.
For your approval.
Yeah. Yes.
And he's just like, I'm out to interview you right now.
Yeah. And then, but what's funny is he was so specific with the instructions for that candle that in this moment, Zero goes, what about the candle? You want me to go light? He goes, oh, no, forget about that.
Yeah.
It doesn't fucking matter.
We're done with that now. You're getting interviewed, kid.
Yeah.
Can't have you in my hotel just messing up.
Uh-huh.
You think if they had lit that candle, maybe she wouldn't have been murdered?
No.
Okay. No, I'd like to think so.
I don't think in the slightest bit that she wouldn't have been murdered. By the way, she was murdered. Can anyone guess out there who did it? You'll know as soon as we tell you about the character.
It was very obvious.
Very. But he asks him about his previous hotel work. He lists off a couple other hotels. And he basically says, experience? Zero. He asks him about his education. And Zero tells him, I took writing and spelling.
Mm-hmm.
At so-and-so, and Gustav was like, education? Zero.
Zero.
And he's like, family? And Zero just quietly, and he's like, zero. And they kind of move on to the next thing, and it's really sad.
Yeah.
Zero never really shows any kind of emotion in this movie.
Is that why
any
he's called Zero?
I was going to say, maybe that's why they named him Zero.
Or maybe that's why he named himself Zero.
Yeah.
Or maybe he was getting on a train platform, and this old man was like, you got any family? He's like, Zero. He goes, well, that's going to be your name.
Like Han Solo?
Exactly.
God damn it. Solo.
So because of this, Zero becomes Gustav's personal protege.
Mm-hmm.
And he has him running around the hotel doing all the important stuff. He's teaching him that a lobby boy should be invisible. but always
ready.
Oh, well, he says that the guests shouldn't notice them, but they should always be aware that they're there if they need them.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Okay.
And this is where we get the montage of Gustav's character, because old Zero is like, oh, a lot of guests came to the hotel for him. And I think it was his pleasure for those guests to come, but they had to be rich, mm-hmm. old, insecure, vain, superficial, blonde, and needy. And it cuts back to the dinner scene with Jude Law and F. Murray Abraham. And he just goes, why blonde? And old Zero goes, oh, because they all were. He's like, that's why.
Just good.
Just because they were. In this montage, we get shots of him, like, swooning old ladies.
Mm-hmm.
We get one random shot of him sitting in bed with this naked old lady. We get the one of an old woman washing him in a bathtub.
Which is weird.
That was the one where it said vain.
Gotcha.
The funniest one was when he mentions the blonde, there's a blonde wig on a bust, and then it pans over, and Ralph Fiennes is standing in front of a mirror with his robe open, eating a vine full of grapes, and this old lady is down on her knees in front of him, sucking him off.
Yikes.
That's not how I ever pictured Voldemort.
Couldn't ruin the wig.
Definitely couldn't ruin the wig.
Sweat it out.
Mm-hmm. My notes, I just wrote down mirror BJ. He also mentions that he was a very heavily perfumed man.
Yes.
Like, whenever
oh my
he...
God.
You could smell him after he had left a room. And it shows this couple getting on an elevator after Gustav had gotten off. And as they're going, he's just... He's been here. Then we see Zero waking up in his servant's quarters, which we got a very brief glimpse of from the 68 flashback, mm-hmm. where it had been redone so it looked nicer. Like, here, it looks like a rundown storeroom.
Yes.
He gets up out of bed. He draws on his little mustache.
Horribly.
Horribly. This one is crooked. They probably did that in one take.
But it's so bad.
I like how he draws it on, looks at it, is like, all right, yeah, this is
perfect.
It.
Goes to, he brushes his suit that's hanging on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But he mentions that he works 6 days a week, half days on Sundays.
But he also mentions the hours. He's like from 5 a.m. to 12 a.m.
To just after midnight.
Yeah. And yeah. I was like... That is horrible.
Oh, it's horrid. Pays that man 2 pennies.
Yes.
But it showed them in like their little dining hall, which is a very narrow room.
Mm-hmm.
They have all the food on the table, and Gustav is doing like the nightly sermon. The guy who hired Zero, Mr. M, I think his name started with an M, basically tells everyone, go ahead and eat, this little hand gesture. And mm-hmm. they descend on this food like a pack of hungry dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And while they're all scarfing down as much as they can, Gustav's just going on with his little sermon.
He was reading a poem. He would read poetry, though, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Randomly.
Yeah. Gustav, he mentions later that he's got a collection of poetry in his room.
Mm-hmm.
But it, like, flashes. At one point during this, it says that he had been there for a month. Zero had been working for Gustav for that month.
But wait, let's circle back real fast, because they also say that Gustav had never... Or never eats with them. He always takes his meals by himself.
Yeah, he eats alone in his room.
Which is, that was a little sad flashback, because he's like sitting in his little tiny chair in his underwear and like undershirt, just eating some cereal.
Yeah, his room's not much bigger than Zero's room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it basically just has a little nook on the right side where he can put a little table.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's the exact same kind of room.
He probably doesn't spend that much time there. He's probably sleeping with other guests in their room.
Oh, he's definitely sleeping with our guests.
In their room.
He's a dirty man.
Well, you know, he's just a man that...
No, he's clean.
Yeah,
he's likes to get around. Completely normal man.
He's an old pervert. we meet Deputy Kovacs. He represents the owner of the hotel, which at this point in the movie, we don't know who that is yet.
Mm-hmm.
He shows up once a month to look at the books and talk to Gustav and their money manager. I think he was called.
Okay.
The little short guy.
Is he the money manager? I thought Jeff Goldblum was the money manager.
No, he's like the lawyer.
Okay. Yeah.
Like the accountant.
Okay.
Kind of.
A money manager, if you will.
Yes, yes, yes. And he mentions the bakery, Mendel's. I think I'm saying that right.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally meet Agatha. But he only mentions her and he says, but we don't have to talk about that right now. Mm-hmm. And it shows her in the bakery making all these beautiful pastries. And then she's riding down the street on her bicycle with like a dozen boxes on either side of her. Like she's got that pole through it and they're being mm-hmm. held up by rope. Mm-hmm. She's really good on this bike. And she's got this birthmark on her face.
The wildest birthmark.
It's a big birthmark. And when we first put the movie on, Eric was like, man, it looks like Mexico. And then later on in the movie, someone makes a remark about, you mean that girl with the Mexico-shaped birthmark on her face?
Oh, mm-hmm. do they? I missed that.
It looks- yeah. That was intense.
Didn't Gustav say it?
Yes. I think it is Gustav who says it.
Yeah.
Because, like, first of all, I was like, that's not Italy. It's not a boot. And I was like, oh, that's Mexico. That's definitely Mexico.
I just thought of an upside-down wave. I don't know.
I thought it was just a random scar. I'm really bad at geography.
But yeah, so, and that's, I can't say her name. Help me out.
Saoirse?
Saoirse.
Ronan?
Saoirse Ronan. I can't say it. Irish actress. We recently saw her in See How They Run, which she was a little, like, constable.
Honestly, same character. She just spoke more in that one. They have the same personality. Both a little aloof, both a little... not slow, but...
Yikes. I'm just waiting on that social media post.
Man, that just made me think of that scene from Parks and Rec. And the guy's like, how many kids you got? No kids. Uh-oh. Yikes. But she was in Lady Bird. She was in Lovely Bones. Mm-hmm. And she is basically Zero's love interest in this film.
No, basically about it. She 100% is.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
But she's so much more than that.
Is she, though?
Yes, she becomes an accomplice.
Then we go to part two, which is Madame CVDUT, which is what it was actually written as when the title card came up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what any of that stands for. I didn't look it up. And
it's a name.
Could vary, die, until... tomorrow.
It ain't that.
I mean.
It ain't that.
Better than nothing.
Thank you.
Yeah. That was real good. Impromptu. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll give it to you. She did good.
Anyway, she's dead. Okay. Zero is out collecting some newspapers and he's walking back. He happens to glance down at it. Gets a shot look and he takes off running.
It's so funny seeing him sprint through this hotel.
With these arms full of newspapers. He's running through this town. He's running through the hotel. All different rooms of the hotel. And he runs up to this room and it says, do not disturb on the door. And he knocks on it and Gustav pops up. And he's in there stooping some lady.
Yikes.
He basically tells him, like, look, she's, Madame D is dead. And Gustav immediately is like, we have to go to her. He goes, how fast can you pack a bag? 5 minutes? Good. Be ready in 5 minutes. He also says that he needs you. I need you to come with me for emotional support, but mostly to carry my luggage.
And doesn't he pack his bag too?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Y'all think he packed his little pencil liner to draw in his fake mustache?
Yes.
As I say, he had it the whole time. Yep. Mm-hmm.
The only time he doesn't have that little mustache on is near the end of the movie. And that
doesn't he start to grow an actual mustache?
Yeah, he starts growing an actual
mustache. No, he does. He does.
Yeah.
But right before they get on the ski lift, they got on that ski lift. It stops halfway later on and they switch. In that moment, he didn't have a mustache at all.
He doesn't have the mustaches on the bike driving through the snow either.
Because that was the same day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, for most of this movie, he's got the little pencil mustache. And at the end, he's got a real mustache. Like a big boy.
Do you think they were like, hey, can you grow our facial hair? And he was like, no. And they were like, perfect.
I think it was just part of the character.
He was like, real distinguishment have mustaches. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to draw a crooked mustache on my face.
He's like, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I'd do it.
Yeah.
He also tells Zero here to grab a specific bottle of champagne with a bucket of ice so they don't have to drink the cat piss on the train. The casual swearing. I love it.
Mm.
When they're on the train, he mentions that she has four awful children who are going to be the only people there celebrating that she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
He says something about life can go by fast. I think is where, does he say that he describes Madame D as dynamite in the sack. Mm-hmm. And Zero's like, she was 84. He goes, I've had older.
Yeah, just casually. And he's like Zero has his drink sitting in front of him, but like Gustav's just casually swirling, talking about life.
Mm-hmm. And he mentioned something about, you'll understand, Zero, when you're a young man, you want the finer things in life. But as you get older, you prefer the cheaper cuts. And he goes, and the older you get, the cheaper the cut, which is fine, because I love a cheap cut.
Yeah, he's like, there's more flavor. I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
Man, it was nasty. You
didn't know. Oh, yeah. Oh, dirty. Dirty, man.
The cheaper cut.
Uh-huh. But the train stops, and why are we stopping at a barley field? And there's a group of soldiers out there, and they come on board to look at people's paperwork.
Papers.
And
I was getting, in a less weird moment, I was getting Polar Express moments. Like, when he came in, he was like, papers, and I was like, ah, yes, the tickets.
You want to see Santa Claus?
We need those tickets.
We need your papers right now to see Santa. Otherwise, you come with me.
Basically.
Gustav has, like, got this really nice little paper, like, passport book.
And he's just chatting the whole time. Yeah. And he's giving it out.
Yeah. He's like, what's the F stand for? Fritz? Franz? He goes, Franz. He goes, ah, I knew it. You'll have Franz. And Zero pulls out his little piece of paperwork, and it looks like it's gone through a washing machine about a dozen times. It's barely holding together.
Mm. You know, like a regular Social Security card.
Yeah. But he says it is a migratory visa with stage 3 worker status on it. And the guards are like looking at him, looking at Zero, looking at him. He's like, come outside. And Gustav tells Zero, don't move. You aren't going to do anything to him. You can't arrest him. He hasn't committed a crime. And then they get into a little scuffle in the train car, and they grab both the guys, throw them up against the walls. They both get bloody noses, and Ralph Fiennes has this great line of, get your hands off my lobby boy.
Yes. Yeah. What's great about this is, like, every time that Zero gets hit in the face, it's directly because of Gustav. Like, it's never for anything he's ever done. It's because Gustav's like, don't do this, and then immediately he gets hit.
How many times does he get? He gets hit, like, what?
3 times?
I can remember 2.
Yeah, and then the third one's in the...
at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he doesn't get hit from anything. Everything he gets hit for is because Gustav.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. That's what happens when you work with people like that.
Yeah.
As he's, like, trying to defend him, but he's the reason why he's getting beat up.
Yep. Like, yep.
It's great.
It's a loyal lobby boy. Very. I wish to get one day.
I mean, hell, Gustav's loyal to a point.
True. In an extreme way.
Yeah.
He's so sweet, though.
When he wants to be. Yeah. Then we meet Edward Norton comes on the train as the leader of these military police.
With the most American accent.
That's what's really funny. No one was really putting on an accent in this movie. Everyone was kind of just using their own natural speaking voice, which I found worked fine.
Yes.
Like, I don't need to know all these characters are from the same place and all have the same accent. It's like, clearly, no, they're all from all around. Mm-hmm. Or it's just one of those goofy things where it's like, it doesn't matter. Just talk how you normally would talk.
It's like, all these countries are fake anyway. Who cares? Mm-hmm.
Hinkles tells him, like, look, Mr. Gustav was kind to me when I was a boy. He knows my parents.
Yeah, because she's like, ah, little Albert.
Yep. And he's like, I apologize for what my men did. I'm so sorry. Now, your associate here, he doesn't have the right paperwork. He needs this specific document, which right now we're on the verge of war, so it's going to be hard to get. But what I can do is give him basically a permission slip. And this was one of the best little jokes in the movie. The slip says that the owner of this, or the carrier of this document, is allowed to move between countries. They're allowed free and unmolested travel. Mm-hmm. Which, maybe don't say molested.
Right? Maybe just free and safe travel?
No, they had to specify.
I mean, it is funny, though, that they specifically use the word unmolested travel. It's just so out of place.
They had to specify.
Yeah. It was funny, though. It was good. Mm-hmm. When they get to Madame D's home, that's Lutz.
Yes.
I guess, like, Lutz Manor? Mm. But it's on the gate when they go in. And we see her maid, played by Leah.
That's the girl from Fast and Furious. Not Fast and Furious. Is she in Fast and Furious?
No. Oh. She was also in that Mission Impossible movie you like. She was the one they were trying to sell gems or sell the diamonds to.
Oh, right. That blonde lady.
Yeah. She was also in the last two James Bond films.
No, I haven't seen them.
Lea Seydoux. I think she's French. Mm.
That sounds right. Sure.
I'm sure I'm saying that completely wrong, but she plays Madame D's maid.
Clotide or Clotilde.
Something like that. She brings Gustav to her casket and he goes, oh, you look, what are they doing to you down at the funeral home? You look younger than you have in years. They put a cream on you? I wish I could get some.
He like picks up her hand. He's like, oh, your nails look better. You changed them.
Yeah. And then he just throws her hand down like it's a used napkin. And you can see in the background, the maid and Zero are kind of like, should he be doing that? Then they are told that her head butler, Serge X, wants to talk to him. Mm-hmm. And they go through this long corridor of doors, and they go through this green door, and they're told to wait back in this office. The reason everything is so hectic in the house right now, on top of the fact that Madame D died, is that her family is there for the will reading. Mm-hmm. And there's cousins, nieces, nephews, room full of people waiting to hear the will. This is where they discover that Jeff Goldblum's character, Deputy Kovacs, also works for Madame D. Mm-hmm. And he comes out with her will, which consists of a tontine.
What's a tontine?
A tontine is, like, say, the four of us.
Oh, is that that thing from Archer?
Yes.
That Woodhouse was in?
Yes, he was in a tontine. So, anyone who doesn't know, the best way I can describe it is a group of people pool together some money, and the last person alive gets it all. And the tontine with Madame D was made with her husband 46 years ago before he died. Wow. It has a tontine, but then it also has 635 amendments to this will. Mm-hmm. In various different forms and documents.
Aren't tontines illegal?
I think so. Okay. But I would base that just off that Archer episode. So I don't know for
that's
sure.
That's all I know about tontines.
Yeah, that's it. And the tontine doesn't really come into play. I think it was just another little joke they threw in there. So everything in the will goes to her son, Dimitri. Mm-hmm. And there will be a few things divided up amongst her daughters. Marguerite, Letizia, and Carolina. And
Carolina.
Yeah. It looks like it should say Carolina. Mm.
Well, they say Carolina.
They specifically said Carolina. But if you look at them, they look like they belong in like Macbeth as the three witches.
Yes.
They look terrifying, all three of them.
Yes.
They have the, like a black, almost like it looks like a swimming cap on their head. Mm-hmm. All three of them have one. They're all pale. They're all wearing all black.
And then that one girl has like that super cute burgundy lipstick on.
But yeah, so everything goes to Dimitri.
Who's played by Adrian Brody.
Oh yeah, Adrian Brody. And his right-hand man, his little goon, is Willem Dafoe, wearing these weird fake teeth in his lower jaw. Looks mm-hmm. like he's got pointy vampire teeth.
He was great.
Yeah, he barely spoke, too.
But he didn't need to, because he just kept flashing those...
He had little skull rings on all of his fingers.
He was also missing, like, his top teeth, right?
No, I didn't think so.
I thought he was.
Mm. I thought he was just wearing some fake bottom teeth to make his bottom teeth more pronounced.
I can't even
remember. He looked kind of like a bulldog.
Man's just looked very threatening the whole time.
And then he had a really bad haircut.
Oh, terrible. Also, going back to the three ladies. Wasn't... their mom was like 86, right?
84. Yeah.
84. Mm-hmm. They already look like they were
also
old.
Also 84.
Like also 84.
Honestly, the one in the middle is like Michael Chiklis.
They were probably all like 74 or some shit.
God, I hope not.
No.
Well, you know, they're probably like 60-something, because their mom probably had them when she was like 18.
She probably had them when she was like 16.
They all look older than Adrian Brody.
Yes.
Adrian Brody looks great in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't look old. He's a fucking asshole in this movie.
Considering the fact that she was still getting it in at her age, I'm going to just assume that she was just getting it in a lot throughout her life.
That is true. I didn't think about that.
She just started early and never
just
stopped.
She was like, I've had it. We're just going to keep going until I can't.
God. Never fucking stop.
Wear this thing out.
And we're literally never.
The cheaper cuts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. She
never fucking stop fucking.
Mm-mm. So,
William Dafoe.
You say William?
Did I say William?
Yeah,
I think so.
Is it not William?
It's Willem.
No, his name's Willem.
Willem.
Very
Willem.
Yes, it's but Willem.
Looking brolic.
Look it up.
Yeah. His name is like Jopling, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
But Mr. Deputy Kovacs mentions that this morning they received another amendment to the will that was sent like in the last couple hours of her life.
Mm-hmm. They were like prior to she died.
Yes, right up until she died. Mm-hmm. And they haven't figured out if it's authentic yet, but it states that the painting she has of Boy with Apple.
Which is the worst name.
Yeah, it's for like, painting. What are you going to call this beautiful work of art? I don't know, it's a boy holding an apple.
I feel like that was like a stand-in name. They were like, I can't think of anything better. Let's just go with it.
But also, the way they talked about this painting, I was expecting more. They're like, oh my god, this painting is gorgeous.
No, it's priceless.
It's just because of the painter. You know how they are. I know y'all have seen plenty of famous paintings. It's just like, that shit ain't shit.
You're paying for a label.
Yeah, it's like that.
Like the Mona Lisa, that's like literally an 8x10.
They're just like, that painting ain't even that great. I do like the Mona Lisa,
though. Basically, this little final document says that Mr. Gustav is to receive this painting tax-free. No, I mean, just boom, it's his. And someone in the room is like, who's Gustav H? And Gustav has this thing of calling people darling. Mm-hmm. And he just walks into the crowd and goes, that would be me, darling. Yes.
But then Adrian Brody has the best reaction to when he like realizes Gustav is there.
He gets a little upset.
A little?
A little upset.
He gets incredibly upset.
Yeah.
He says some very mean things.
And he's like, you fucking fruit.
Yes.
He doesn't say the word fruit.
It's another F word that we shouldn't say.
Yeah.
Not friend.
That means a bundle of sticks.
So,
okay.
He tells him, like, if I find out that you've laid one finger on my mother, whether before she was, while she was alive or dead.
Yikes.
He's like, I'm going to have you thrown in jail or something like that.
He already knew he.
Right.
He knew it.
But Gustav says something about, well, I go to bed with all my friends.
Yes.
And this is where Adrian Brody punches him in the face.
Wait. But then he's like, I go to bed with all my friends. But then he's like, he says something. He's like, I thought you called me a little F word. And he's like, well, you are, but you could be bisexual.
Yeah, you're bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think that's where the punching happens.
Yes.
Adrian Brody punches
Gustav.
Dimitri punches Gustav. And then Zero punches Dimitri.
Yep.
And then Jopling punches Zero.
Shout outs to fucking Zero, though.
Right?
Oh, Zero's a ride or die, man.
He's definitely a ride or die.
Because he's like holding something, too, and he's just like, he's quick with it, too. He's like,
yeah.
Wow. My boy got punched. I guess we punching then. Goddamn, Zero.
And when they stand back up, Gustav's got the bloody nose, and he says something about, I think this is where they have the bisexual comment.
Okay.
And I think he says something about, well, how about this? I'm leaving. And he turns around and walks away. And the butler brings him back down to the kitchen. He tells him, you know, wait right here. I need to talk to you about something. And Gustav is describing the painting to Zero. And he goes, he interrupts him. He goes, can I see it? And Gustav's like, well, I don't see why not. And they make their way all the way to like the top of the house.
Through these spiral staircases, through a couple doors.
Yeah, and they're looking at this painting and like they're in awe of it. And it's like Edda said, it's like, it's okay.
And he's like, it reminds me of me.
I think he says that on the train later.
Yeah.
Because he says that she said it reminded her of me, and I think I see it too. We were sitting there watching the movie last night. Eric was like, I see it.
Freaking apple.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's I don't like that painting.
No. Like, it's a fine painting, but it's like, I'm not going to lose my shit over it.
Right. And everybody's mad about him getting this painting.
Right?
Yes. And it's like the worst painting ever.
Everyone. Like, even when he reads in the will that the painting goes to Gustav, Gustav's reaction is, wow. They're standing there looking at it, and Zero kind of like looks at Gustav like, so it's yours? He goes and grabs a stool. Gustav steps up on it and looks at Zero, and Zero just gives him a head nod, like, yeah, take it, it's yours. And he pops it off the wall, and there's a clear spot where a picture was hanging, and they're like, oh, well, we gotta cover this, we can't just leave that there. So Zero grabs the first painting he can see, which does not fit that spot, but it is also a very detailed photo of two women having sex. like there's boobs and vagina in this photo mm-hmm. or painting. And they're just like, yeah, that's perfect. Fingers
go in places.
Yeah.
Going to town.
Yeah.
Like, that's perfect. No one's going to notice.
Which makes me wonder. She was into that, right?
Ooh. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The old lady?
Yeah.
Well, we did say previously that that is what she was doing.
She was still getting it in at her age. So she definitely was trying a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. A lot of those cheaper cuts, apparently.
She was not
she
out
was
here
the cheap cut.
Just eating vanilla all her life.
They walk all the way downstairs with this painting in hand, and Gustav asks Serge if he can wrap it up for him. And he pulls out the wax paper, and he goes to wrap it up, and you can see he slides an envelope behind the painting mm-hmm. that just says, I think it says confidential on it. Mm-hmm. And we don't see that envelope again for about an hour.
Which I don't know why he didn't tell Gustav about.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Oh, I had to look this up.
Okay.
We'll get there. It's almost there. So they leave. They get in the car. This is where Gustav asks him, you know, what did you want to talk to me about? And Serge says, I can't really say right now. They drive away. And on the train, this is where he's got the comment about, oh, it looks like me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he like, does a little.
Yeah, he like poses kind of like the painting. Yeah,
oh, it's so terrible.
Yeah. He's like, oh, this is beautiful. It's going to hang above my bed forever. It's amazing. I love this. And he lays down and immediately he goes, we should sell it.
Yes.
He's like, either they're going to come back to try to steal it or worse. And he goes, we'll make a pact. We'll sell it. We'll try to get this much money for it. We'll disappear to
the Amalfi Coast.
No, I don't think that was it.
Oh.
Maldives?
Which is on the Amalfi Coast.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I remember he... Okay.
Geography.
Yeah. Italy.
Did we skip the part where they get stopped, or is this where it's coming up? Because I'm sleep deprived, so...
Where they get stopped by the soldiers?
Yeah. On the train?
Yeah, we...
They already have
way by
that. That happens on the way to Madame Madi.
We flew by that. Did you want to make a comment about the busted noses?
Yes.
Yeah, so we definitely made comments about the busted noses.
Yep, nope. Because sleep deprived, Erica was just like, that went whoop.
Erica gone. Literally said, the only times that Zero gets injured is because of Gustav.
And that's when I came back.
Yeah, in that scenario, he got injured because...
Completely blanked.
Of Gustav.
Because I was like, when we got to the point where he punched people in the nose, I was like, wait, we already missed the first one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My bad.
But yeah, I think...
And I had an out-of-body experience.
I sure did.
You wanted to make a comment about how they flung them into the wall so hard that they busted their nose.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty crucial. That's crucial stuff.
Yeah.
Those guards weren't playing around.
No. They were Nazi stand-ins.
No, the Nazi stand-ins are later.
Oh.
Where they had the little Zs.
Yeah, the black suits.
Those... They didn't have...
No, these guys were in gray.
Oh, maybe they were pre-Nazis.
Yeah, different. Okay. Maybe. Yeah. Different military force to start off with.
Yeah, somebody throws you into the wall that hard. I feel like that's something that would definitely send you into a rage of some sort.
Oh, yeah, then we talked about, yep.
Calming down is not that's out of the window after that.
Yeah.
You got to get shot or something.
No, I'd be mad if someone touched my lobby boy, too.
Yeah.
But they steal the painting. They're on the train. They make a pact that Zero will get 1.5% of whatever they make for selling this thing.
Wait, let's circle back real fast. To, like, the beginning of that scene when he's, like, laying in bed. And then he's, like, in his full little red pajamas. And he, like, climbs the stairs and just kind of hops up on the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's it's so scene. Cute. He's just, like,
He does a little bloop. Just hops right up on Zero's bunk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just kicking his feet the whole time. He's so cute
he's
in
such
it.
A little kid.
Yeah. But this is where he tells Zero, like, look, if I should die before you, which I most likely will, that you'll inherit everything I own.
Zero's
he's like, you'll be the sole heir to everything. And he's like, I don't have much. Some books of poetry, some perfume, or some, perfumes.
Fucking perfume.
Yeah, he loves that perfume.
So much.
Very much.
And now a painting.
Mm-hmm.
But he was getting a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
Zero's getting a really good deal. It's more than he had.
But I like how Zero's like, only 1.5%? What about 10%?
Yeah, let me get 10.
He's like, oh, I wouldn't even pay a real dealer that much.
Yeah, like, hell no, fucking bum.
And he says, no, 1.5 is correct. Not fair, correct. They hide the
painting.
Thank you. They hide the painting. I almost said safe. They hide the painting in the safe at the hotel. This other bellboy walks in, and he goes, excuse me? And Gustav just goes, uh-huh. It's like, he also has moments of not just the casual swearing, but the casual moments of dropping any kind of actual societal formalism. But he just, uh-huh. the police are here. They're looking for you. Beat. Well, I'll be right there. And they run down to the lobby. And this is a great long shot because, like, they're way in the background on the stairs coming down into the lobby. And it's the gray-suited military police. And Edward Norton's there. They say that they're here to arrest Gustav for the murder of Madame D. And he goes, "She's been murdered. Of course. We never got a cause of death. That's terrible. And you think I did it?" And he just turns around and he runs away.
But it's also really funny because, like, everyone's, like, just looking at him. They're just like, what?
And he's not, like, running full speed. No. He's, like, at a gentle jog. And the police are chasing him at the exact same pace. And they run all the way back from where he just came from, all the way up the stairs. That was a good one. Because everyone, like you just said, everyone's just staring, like, what's going on?
That's kind of what I like about, like, Wes Anderson movies. Nothing is languid. Everything is quick, snappy. There's pauses, but it's, like, always, like, quick, snappy move. No one's, like, flowing through these moments.
No, I'd say that's good. Because I feel like that scene just before this, when the guy tells him that the cops are there, mm-hmm. and he has that few extra beats before he says, "Well, I'll be right there." That's funny. That works. Mm-hmm. If his reaction had been immediate, it wouldn't have been as funny.
Right.
So now we're at part three. Checkpoint 19, criminal internment camp. And it's been another week, I think, at this point.
Yes.
Zero goes to see Gustav in prison, and he's standing outside this big Checkpoint 19 door. It's this huge door. And like all Wes Anderson films, what you're looking at is center frames. So that's all you can see. And then you just hear a, hey, and the camera shifts over real quickly, and there's a very small regular door. This guard is ushering Zero through.
This reminded me, we just watched Muppets Most Wanted. It mm-hmm. reminded me of when Kermit gets to
the gulag.
That's exactly what that scene reminded me of. Because I was like, oh, this could be a Muppet movie. Like, I would love to see the Muppets.
Oh, this would be a great Muppet movie.
It would be.
You just keep Ralph Fiennes.
Yes.
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 Everything about it, though, would be funny. Madame D could be Camilla.
Yeah, you know I love my girl Camilla.
But they bring Gustav in to talk to Zero, and he's black and blue. He's got cuts on his face. He goes, "Oh my God, what happened to you?" He goes, "I beat up some little shit named Pinky." He's like, "That's what I'm telling you, Zero. When you get in here, you can't be a candy ass. You got to show him you mean business." So I beat the shit out of him. He's actually a lovely dear friend now.
Yeah, he's like, "You should see him." That's all I remember. He's like, "But you should see him."
He says something. He's like, he mentions really him bad. Being a dear friend, and he mentions, "I hope you get to meet him."
Yeah. Also, is this when we flash back to Zero and Agatha on their first or third date? And he's like, "I asked her to marry me 3 days or on the third date," and she said yes.
I think we're getting there. Okay. Yeah, I think that's close to where we are right now. But he mentions that, like, how's the case going? And he's Zero sat down with Deputy Kovacs, and he told him that. And this seemed very like Jeff Goldblum was reading off cue cards.
Yes.
Like, they were like, "Jeff, just sit down, read the cards. It doesn't matter if it sounds natural or not. We're going to use it. Everything about this movie needs to be awkward." And he tells him that the night of the murder, Mr. Gustav was witnessed at the house. He left and he came back not 24 hours later after she was dead. Mm-hmm. And the witness for this was Serge X, mm-hmm. her butler. This is what Serge wanted to talk to him about, because he was pressured into this by her real killer, Dimitri. Her son.
Where do we find that out?
I think that's around the time when they're talking to him at the church.
Oh, okay.
But it was later on after they found him, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In the confessional.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
But this was the thing that when I was rewatching it earlier, that I didn't. I don't remember that last night.
Yeah, I don't remember it last night either.
And then as Jeff Goldblum is reading that. And said about Serge. Serge has disappeared as well, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's gone into hiding.
Yes.
This is the part where Zero mentions that Agatha is now his fiance on their third date. They went to a movie, and he proposes, and she immediately says yes. And they start taking their clothes off of their own. Immediately. They were fucking in this theater.
Yep.
Like you do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
No, it's like that one theater in American Werewolf in London.
The porno theater?
Yes.
Well, that's a little different.
Yes, oh. Very different.
That one's made for that.
Literally a porn theater.
Oh.
You just assume they're fucking in
there. They turned this movie theater into a porn theater. Gosh. That's the difference. But it shows Gustav walking through the jail doing like his rounds, and he's out. He's like, anyone want some fresh mush? Or does he call it slop?
Mm-hmm. No, I think he calls it. I think he called it slop.
I thought it was mush.
I thought he called it slop. I think it. No, I'm thinking it was mush.
Yeah, because the guy's like, it just needs a little bit of salt.
Yeah, because he calls that one guy, what about you, big fellow with a scar on your face? You want some? And the guy comes over and gets hot, and he gives him a little bowl, and the guy's like, gives a little approving nod, and he goes back to his bunk.
He was heinous looking.
Yeah,
he was scary. Sweet, though. He's a guy.
Yeah, these convicts are all so sweet.
They are! Very sweet
convicts. Thank goodness this wasn't some regular horrible jail.
Yeah. But he walks down to his room where Pinky is hanging out with the other guys, and he brings in a box he got from Mendel's. Mm-hmm. And he sits down and opens the box, and he goes, who's got the throat slitter? And they cut it with this little knife, and they all take a piece. And this is where they are like, all right, Gustav, you're our friend now, and we want to let you in on our escape plan. Harvey Keitel is one of these inmates. He's Ludwig. He's also bald in this movie. He's completely shaven. Mm-hmm. He looks so odd from how I normally have seen him. He's covered in tattoos. And he pulls out this map of the prison. And Gustav's like, who drew this? You're like, this is amazing. Your artwork is fantastic.
He's like, the line work is so detailed.
You have some real skill here. And it's like, this is what's important right now. Mm-hmm. Which they're really good about that. Stopping to do some shit that you can wait.
It reminds me of Teen Wolf a little bit, how, like, whenever they'd be in the middle of a fight, like, Scott and whoever his love interest is in the scene would have a whole little moment.
Yeah, they're like, oh, man, I'm like,
people are dying.
It made me think of that scene from Gremlins 2 when Phoebe Cates is like, there was a man, he was dressed as Abraham Lincoln, and Billy's like, honey, now's not the time for this. But no one came to stop them in this film. And they're like, look, we have fake paperwork, we have extra clothes, we have a rope ladder, we have flashlights. The only thing we don't have are digging tools. He goes, we're gonna dig out of here and we're gonna meet by the checkpoint 19 supply drop, I think they said. Mm-hmm. Gustav is like, I have an idea. And we see that they've gotten Agatha involved in their criminal hijinks, and she's hiding digging tools inside of her pastries.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
She's an accomplice now.
She's an accomplice.
Much more than a love interest now.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Ask yourself if you would also be an accomplice and love interest if you knew that your love interest was doing crimes.
I would.
You would?
Yeah,
I would. Going to fucking jail, pal.
I mean,
Erica's like Linda from Bob's Burgers when he wakes up and he goes, I'm killing Teddy. And she goes, we're killing Teddy? Okay, I guess I can homeschool the kids for a little while. He goes, no, I'm killing him with the food I'm giving him. She goes, oh, well, I'm going to go back to sleep.
Just be aware that when y'all get arrested, y'all will not be in the same jail.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you need to think about who you're being ratted out with. If it's another female, then y'all will be in the same jail.
I'm throwing her under the bus.
Yikes. Right. Hopefully not intentionally and actually throwing her under a bus.
If I have to.
Is it a city bus?
If it keeps me out of jail.
I feel like no matter what type of bus it is, if it runs you over, you're done.
Look, the ride or die needed, like, zero is Gustav's ride or die. I will be your ride and die.
Unless you're that chick from Mean Girls, then you get hit by a bus and you live.
Exactly. Oh, gosh. And you get a good payout because it's a city bus.
That's a school bus.
And good. That's even better.
Oh, gosh.
And you still look good especially in the dress.
Especially if
afterwards.
There's children on it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Winning.
Where were we? Prison break.
Yeah.
Mendel's. So I love the next scene where they like have all the stuff that's coming into the prison. And the guy's like cutting it up. And it was so great. And he opens up the box and it's this pretty little cake. And he just lets it pass right on by.
But he hesitates. You can see he's got the knife. He's like, I can't do it. Go ahead. Yeah. It's good. Let it go.
This is Mendel's.
It's because it's like a cultural thing, right? Like you're not allowed to cut into like a specific thing in like some sort of culture.
I don't know. They got fake cultures in that movie.
This whole movie is nothing but fake countries. Yeah, so, I mean, it might just be a thing where it's like, it's too pretty.
But I think it's like a reference to like,
this is Mendel's.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be.
But you don't just slice
up
Mendel's.
But also you would think after, I don't know, like the third time of seeing a Mendel's cake, you might be like, Maybe I should
check
it's
this.
It's just Mendel's. They're everywhere. It's like Starbucks.
You don't defile Mendel's.
It's like a good Tim Hortons.
I think that's what it was. It's just like, it's Mendel's. Look how beautiful it looks. I'm not going to fuck this up.
Wasn't that shit shaped like a hammer?
It was shaped like a number one.
Oh.
Because
the hammer was hidden
one.
In a number one.
Smart.
Yeah, she made it odd shapes. But it was funny that when she was making it, Zero was there.
Mm-hmm.
And her employer comes in.
Mendel.
Mindel.
Air Mindel.
Yes. And like, they really quickly hide all the shit they're doing and make it look like she's just making the ordinary pastries.
Oh, nah, because if he'd have walked in there and she'd have been making different shapes, he'd have been like, what the fuck is that?
Also, who's this guy?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, he didn't care about the dude. As long as she's not making weird shapes on his damn pastries.
But they dig out of their cell.
It's so cute watching them dig.
Oh, my God. It's like they're huddled around this tiny hole in the floor, and they're all digging, and then a guard comes by, and they get quiet, turn the lights off. But when it comes time for their actual escape, the route they take is so fucking ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of Fantastic Mr. Fox when he's jumping into that chicken coop, and it's like the most drawn out, convoluted like route to get to the end goal, where he does like the most ass backwards flip to like get there.
It's so unnecessary.
Yes,
it's calculated
because they dig down through the floor.
Mm-hmm.
They steal a ladder.
The world's longest ladder.
This ladder is obnoxious. Yep. They bring the ladder and they put it down through the main cell block.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're climbing down, one of the another guy in the cell is like, guards, they're escaping, guards. And someone comes up behind him and like grabs him. And you just hear,
the sweet guy.
Yes. It's the guy with the scar on his face. Yeah. He never says a word. And like, thank you, you lovely man. You're so kind. He's like, he just killed some guy with his bare hand.
He's so kind.
Yeah, like Luca Brasi.
Exactly.
Oh, no.
Then is this where they make their way through the guards' barracks?
Did they already do the ladder outside the window?
No, that's after the guards' barracks.
Okay.
Because that's like the last hole, like down
that's
the side.
That's after they've lost Pinky.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like.
I don't remember when, if it happens before the long ladder or if it happens after, but they open up like an opening in the floor, like a little hatch, and they're right above some guards playing poker. So Pinky grabs the throat slitter and he jumps down in there, and you just hear the commotion. And then when it cuts back to it, all the guards are dead except for Pinky and the last guard, who are each stabbing each other, and they both die.
Yeah.
And then Gustav just says, well, I guess that's a draw.
Yeah. That was fucking hellacious, though, because it was like five of them down there, right?
Yeah,
a lot of them.
He slaughtered all of them.
God damn.
Which is funny, because like Pinky's like the smallest man.
Yeah.
Didn't he make like a weird face before he jumped in the hole and started just going for broke with these damn guards?
I don't know. I just noticed he pulled out the throat slitter and he like kissed it. He was like, mwah, and then he jumped in the hole. But when they get to the guards' barracks, they have to literally swing on pipes, like monkey bars above the guards.
They're also like stepping over them in bed.
Yeah, they're like going up from nightstand to nightstand, and then they're crawling under their beds on the floor. Then they're at a window and they're using their tools to cut through the bars.
Like ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, yeah.
Ding, 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 ding.
Then they use the rope ladder. I don't think it shows this, but then they go into a sewer because they come out a sewer drain at the end when they reunite with Zero. Gustav is like, oh, you know, you guys were great. I'm going to miss you. And he goes, no time to talk. We got to go catch this bus. And Harvey Keitel's character, Ludwig, and the other two guys get on the bus, and they proceed to kill the bus driver.
I mean, the bus driver is a witness here.
He didn't know who they were. But it's just funny because, like, they're talking, Gustav is talking so sweet about them in, like, the moment, and they're over there slaughtering this bus driver. They drag him out of his seat and drag him to the back of the bus. And they drive away, and they're standing there wasting all this time, again, talking about...
this is where we get Zero's backstory.
We do, but he mentions that, he's like, did you bring...
After the perfume, the freaking perfume.
Right, there's a couple things before the perfume.
Yeah.
And they're all things that either Zero forgot or didn't have time to get.
Yeah, because it was like a change of clothes. Lay low.
Yeah, he didn't have a safe house.
Yeah, and I guess it was the change of... Was it the change of clothes?
I think it might have been a change of clothes.
Something else.
And then it's the perfume that sets Gustav off. Oh, he says some mean stuff to Zero.
It was facial hair. Or Zero's like, I thought you were going to grow some.
Nose, yeah.
A fake nose and beard?
And the facial hair. I thought you were just going to grow some.
Yeah, I didn't think it would have looked right. And he's like, basically tells Zero he's kind of useless. And then I don't remember how it comes up his backstory, but he asks where he's from. Or how he got there.
Why did you ever leave wherever the fuck you came from?
Yes.
And then he says something like, it's like you're an orphan of a blah, blah, blah. Like he names out exactly like what it is. And Zero's like, I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Because he says the war made him leave. His whole family was killed in a bombing.
His father was killed. His family was killed in the firing squad.
A firing squad. Yes. Yeah. His family was killed in the firing squad. Gustav immediately is like, oh, so it's less of a immigrant situation. You're more of a refugee. And he goes, oh, I take back everything I just said. I am a fool. I'm sorry. He's like, don't make excuses for me. Because Zero's like, no, it's fine. It's like, he's no, it's not fine. He's like, what I did was wrong just now. Then the sirens go off.
Yes.
And then they're like, oh, we should go. It's like, it's been a good 5 minutes you've been standing
maybe
here.
Maybe more.
Should have just gone. Should have left.
This is a conversation for the road.
Right.
And I think now we are in part four. Because Zero didn't have a safe house, he does mention he has someone that he can call. But he shouldn't be telling Zero anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Society of Crossed Keys.
Yes.
Yep. And where they have a whole montage of concierges?
Yes.
Concierges calling each other.
Mm-hmm.
Saying the exact same thing.
Yeah. They're all in the middle of something. Mm-hmm. Someone comes up and goes, well, you take over.
Yeah.
One of them is like performing CPR, which was probably the funniest one.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells the guy to take over. One of them is hanging a sign. One of them is...
Cooking. Tasting the food. Because he's like, it needs salt and pepper. And then the person comes up and tells him, he's like, take over. And then they taste it and it's like, it needs salt.
Yeah. I think Bill Murray, the first one we meet, he's helping a guest check in or out.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all, for the most part, famous people. One of them, I don't know why he looked familiar to me, but he did.
Is it the guy with the in the orange?
Yes, it was the man with the big beard and the orange turban.
Mm-hmm.
I looked up his filmography. I didn't recognize anything. But the rest of them all did look familiar to me because they are Bill Murray, Bob Balaban. One of the other ones is Fisher Stevens.
Who was it?
He was one of Koopa's goons in Super Mario Bros. From the 80s.
Wow.
And he's a white man.
A white man?
Who did brownface?
Oh no!
For two movies in the 80s called Short Circuit 1 and 2.
Oh no!
And he plays an Indian character with the full accent and all.
In Short Circuit 2?
In 1 and 2.
Oh.
He plays the same character in both films.
Oh no! Did no one tell him?
It was the 80s.
After the first one?
It was the 80s.
Both of them?
It was the 80s.
No one cared.
Cocaine?
Sure. Racism in Hollywood?
Never.
I know. This is the point where Dimitri meets with Deputy Kovacs, and he's like, look, there's part of your mother's will that's missing. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it looks like, but there's something missing here.
One piece of paper out of those, like, piles and piles of paper. He's like, there's one piece of paper missing.
And he has everything on his desk, and it's, like, nice and neat and organized. Yeah. Like, this man went through this mess of a will with its 635 amendments. And he's got it all on his desk, and he says there's something missing. And Dimitri's there, the three sisters are there, and Jopling is there.
Holding, his name's cat?
Holding his cat. I believe the conversation is something like, look, you're either going to help me get this inheritance, get that painting back, or no, they don't know the painting's gone yet.
Yeah.
Fight the fact that my mother wants to leave this to him, or you're not, or you're basically my enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff Goldblum's character is like, look, I'm going to go do everything according to the law.
He's like, I'm going to do my job correctly.
Right. And that pisses off Adrian Brody, and he gets up and leaves. And the three sisters leave. And fucking Willem Dafoe just throws his cat out the window.
Yeets it out the window.
And Goldblum is like, did he just throw my cat out the window? And all three of the sisters are like, oh, no, I don't think so. I don't know. I didn't see it. And you see the shot of Goldblum run out the window and look down, and the cat's just dead on the street.
Splattered.
Just dead.
It is messed up.
But what's funny is when he's leaving his office later, he goes to the coat check and he pulls out a ticket.
Oh. But the ticket says dead cat.
It says deceased or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they give him a little freaking bag and
with
you can
like
see a blood stain on it. He had his cat in the coat check. He gets on the bus and he realizes that Willem Dafoe is following him. Mm-hmm. And he just holds up the dead cat like, I'm not going to forget this. They go to the museum, and it's got a big sign that says closing in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole scene is just nothing but footsteps. Like, there's not really any dialogue. Just hear them walking through this museum.
It's like Scooby-Doo, but, like, no music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scooby-Doo was actually creepy.
Yeah, because Willem Dafoe is chasing after Goldblum through this museum. And you can hear each other. They can hear each other's footsteps as they're walking through. Dafoe takes his shoes off mm-hmm. at one point. And Goldblum is, like, making his way toward the rear exit. And as he gets there, he opens the door. Willem Dafoe kind of comes out of nowhere and slams the door shut. And cuts off four of Jeff Goldblum's fingers.
Yep.
Then you can kind of hear a bit of a struggle. And then Dafoe comes out and puts the four fingers in a rag. And he puts them in his pocket and he goes away.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I did not like that part at all.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
But what was funny is...
Distracted.
Before he gets to the museum... He just throws the cat in a trash can outside of the museum's
gate.
Well,
what else is he going to do with it? It's a dead cat. It's being chased by a murderer.
Yeah, I, to my death, carrying it till my murder year.
He also brought this cat with him, so you would feel like there would be some semblance of, like,
yeah, an emotional attachment.
Well, I think right now his main priority is not dying.
Mm.
He's like, let me get rid of this, no pun intended, this dead weight. Huh?
I'll give you that one.
Because at the end, he also ditches his suitcase and his umbrella.
Yeah, he does. He does drop, like, everything.
He's just trying to get away.
Yeah.
Now, why he went to a museum that was about to be unoccupied, I don't know. He should have gone somewhere that was going to be very crowded.
Like a restaurant like or a Denny's.
Bar. A Denny's. Oh, yes. The 1932 European Denny's. The Grand Budapest Denny's. So this is the cross keys thing. They call people. They're trying to prove Gustav's innocence now. Mm-hmm. Zero and Gustav. They figure out they need to find Serge because he knows something about this because he was pressured into saying that he saw Gustav kill Lady D,
mm-hmm.
Madame D. Sorry. And they go through this whole crazy thing where they're talking to all these monks, all the priests in the white robes.
Oh, okay.
Because they go up to the top of the ski lift, and someone pops up, are you Monsieur Gustav H. of the Grand Budapest Hotel?
Yes.
And he goes, get on the next lift. Gets on. It stops halfway up. Another one.
I would never.
No. So another ski lift stops right next to their ski lift, and they're just standing over open air.
Wait, did you... We skipped over the part where, before we get to this part... They get in the car with Bill Murray.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Murray has the widest man spread I've ever seen in my life.
It
was door to door. His knees were touching.
Yeah, he was. Because he also gave them a bottle of the perfume.
Yes.
That he
oh
liked.
My God. The freaking perfume.
Yeah. Yeah. He said I could only get a small bottle.
Yeah, and he gives it to Gustav. Gustav starts off and he's like, gives it to Zero. And Zero's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, because Gustav had to crawl through a sewer to get out, so he smells like literal shit.
Mm-hmm.
And Murray tells them, like, look, I got you a third-class ticket on this train.
Yep.
And he goes, third class? You know, this is the best I can do. Short notice. But you will need these for the dining car. And they're wearing these almost like peasant-esque clothes.
Yeah, these newsboys' clothes.
Yeah, they're not suits and everything. And he gives them ties.
Mm-hmm.
So they're wearing ties the rest of the scene. He gives them the tickets, the ties... And he tells them where to go.
Yeah, and it cuts to them being on the train in the third class, and it's them on top, and you see people moving down on the bottom.
Yeah, and they're... Aren't they... Oh, I missed this completely. Aren't they talking about Agatha?
Yes.
And because of what they're going through together, is this where Zero says that they're brothers? Or is that later?
I don't remember them saying that.
Yeah.
I thought that was... Didn't they say that when they escaped the prison? That they were brothers?
Oh, I thought it was after that, but it might have been.
I don't know. This movie is all sorts of pieces, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So either way, they have this really good bond. The two of them are very close now.
I mean, he did give him his fortune. What? They've only known each other a month?
3 months?
A few months, yeah.
But, okay, so they're on the ski lift, and the ski lifts stop next to each other. Another monk does the same thing. Monsieur Gustav H. of the Grand Budapest Hotel? Yes. Or he said, or sometimes he goes, uh-huh. They swap ski lifts in the middle of the run.
Which is funny because there's just this family also that's on the ski lift.
Just chilling.
Just not saying a word.
Mm-hmm. And they're just like looking at each other. It's good.
So they go up to the other side. There's another monk in a window. Are you Michel Gustav of the Grand Budapest Hotel? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And he tells them, put on these robes, take these Bibles, does he tell them to chant or sing?
Yep, they said sing.
Sing. And they go in where all these other monks are doing like their morning prayer.
Zero bumps this one guy out of his spot, though.
Oh, yeah. And the guy just gets up and goes across the aisle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And gives Zero a funny look. But another monk sits down next to them, and he does the same thing. And are you Miss Yoku's? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Get on with it. He goes, confess. He goes, I didn't kill her, damn it. I need to find out who did kill her. Are you going to help me or not? And he goes, no, confess. And he points to the confession booth in the back. And they go into the confessional, and we finally catch back up with Serge. And this is basically where he tells them, like, look, I was pressured into doing this by Dimitri. If I didn't, they would hurt my family, who we missed earlier. But Jopling, Willem Dafoe's character, went to go talk to Serge's sister.
His club-footed sister.
And she said she hadn't seen him. Later, he's on the phone with Dimitri, and Dimitri says to go back and talk to her again, but be more pressing. And we find out later that he actually kills her and cuts her head off and puts it in a basket.
Yes.
And he leaves it for Edward Norton's police to find. While they're talking to Serge in the booth, Serge just stops talking, and when they go to look at him, they find he's been strangled. And Willem Dafoe is leaving dressed as a monk. And this is where we have the awesome... using miniatures again, the ski scene.
Yes.
Willem Dafoe's in skis, and they've stolen a sled that had what looked like the statue of a saint on it.
Yeah, they just knock it over. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. And Zero can't really control the sled.
But they are booking it.
Oh, they're going so fast. Yeah. And they eventually go down a ski jump. They land, no problem. They do crash a little bit at the very end when they cross the finish line. Gustav is hanging over the cliff, and Jopling is about to break all the ice and snow free to knock him, to send him falling down.
Yeah.
And Zero basically tackles this man and sends him flying off the edge of the cliff.
But it's like, it's kind of funny, like, because, like, Gustav's, like, giving his final farewell, saying his poem, and, like, Willem Dafoe's just, like, stomping on the ice. Mm-hmm. Just, like, instead of just, you know.
Kicking him in the face and making him drop.
Exactly. Like, if you're going to kill somebody.
Shooting him, he has a gun.
You got to up the drama.
Yeah.
No. He didn't want her to die from the shot. He wanted him to die from the fall.
Yeah, for real.
This man enjoys killing.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe's character sucks.
But yeah, he just shoves him off the cliff.
Oh, he full-on tackles him. And then they once again, the police are like right across the ravine. Like, hey, look, quit running. You're a fugitive of justice. And they're like, well, we should probably stop and say a prayer for a moment real quick because he killed Serge.
He just gets like, he needs a moment of silence.
Yeah, for a loyal servant. Being struck down. And they stand there for a second. That's probably good enough. And they steal Jopling's motorcycle. And they get back to the Grand Budapest. And they've asked Agatha to go in and get the painting. Because they would be recognized immediately. But also, this is where the fascist military group, the Nazi stand-ins, have taken over the hotel. Owen Wilson is acting as the concierge right now.
Yes.
Apparently, he's also a member of the Cross Keys organization.
Is he a Nazi, though? Okay.
Nah, he just worked for the hotel.
Okay.
He's just a hotel guy, yeah. Okay. Agatha goes in. She gets the painting out of the vault. And as she's leaving, Dimitri comes in. Dimitri recognizes her.
Yes.
But I don't remember how he recognized her. Or is it just the fact she's carrying...
He recognizes the Mendels.
Oh, because she dropped off to distract a guard at the door. Okay. And he sees her carrying the painting-shaped package. Okay. He gets on the elevator with her, and they go up to 6. And earlier in the movie, they specifically requested 6 as well. And this was probably my favorite gag in the movie. This made me laugh the hardest. He gives her a couple seconds to get off the elevator, and then he starts following her. And they're walking through this hotel, and she takes a right... And when Dimitri catches up to her at that corner and he turns right, she's all the way down at the end of the hallway. She just took off sprinting.
Like, you just see her booking it down the hall.
And she's gone. That made me laugh so fucking hard last night. That was great.
But, like, in the Mendels van.
This tiny little van.
Yeah. Zero and Gustav are in there and they see Dimitri go in. They're like, oh, we have to go help her. So they, like, carry the boxes in.
But it was really funny right before that they had that conversation of, oh, the beautiful Grand Budapest. I'll never set foot inside her halls again.
Yeah.
And immediately, like, we're going to have to go inside. Just everything they say, they immediately have to take back. It's just so goofy bullshit.
But I like when they go in and they bring the front desk guy.
Another cake?
Yeah, his face is just covered.
And it's just the little crumbs from the last one. And he's like,
I don't know
another,
if I have,
yep.
I don't know if I have room for another one. Is this where they come out onto the opposite sides of the balcony and Dimitri starts shooting at them?
Not yet. Not because yet. There's the moment where they're carrying
she
the boxes.
She goes out the window too, though, right? At the end of the hall?
She goes out the window, yeah.
Yeah.
But not yet.
No.
Gotcha.
Because there's a moment where they're carrying the boxes, trying to go after after Agatha, and Zero sees another lobby boy, and he's like, "Who are you?" And he's like,
"Oh yeah," because they asked if they had seen another girl go through here, and he gives up the information. Literally trying to save the love of Zero's life,
right?
He has to stop and tell this kid, "You never give that kind of information up as a lobby boy."
He's like, "You are a bolt."
Yeah, another wasting time gag.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was a good one, though.
Yeah.
I like that one. Look, you don't talk to anyone who comes through here. You're as bad as that guy from North by Northwest. Oh, but we forgot to mention what Serge also told them in the confession booth is that she had, Madame D had a second will.
Yeah, and he made a copy.
Like he made a copy.
He lost the original and then made a copy.
And it was specifically to be implemented in the case, in the event she should be murdered. Mm-hmm. That second will would go into effect, which at this moment kind of tells us as the audience that that's what he hid behind the painting when they stole it earlier in the film, the confidential envelope. Mm-hmm. Agatha sees it when she's hanging out the window, hanging by the portrait.
But wait, now we're at the shootout.
We're at the shootout.
Yeah.
Yep.
Gustav and Zero pop out on one side of the balcony. Dimitri's on the other side. He just starts shooting at them, and these guards start coming out of their rooms, and everyone is just firing back and forth across the balcony at each other. No one really knows who they're shooting at.
Mexican standoff.
Yeah.
And Edward Norton pops up and he's like, "You're all under arrest." And Zero runs out. He's trying to save Agatha. And he runs right through the same window and he goes over the balcony. So now they're both hanging there.
Yeah, because he goes to knock on the door. He realizes the door is locked. And he's like, keeps on knocking. He's like, "Fine, I got to break it down." But before he can break it down, the door opens, and that's how he ends up running through.
Yeah, he just runs right through the open door, right out the window.
A very Looney Tunes gag.
Yes.
Yeah, very, very. So they fall into the back of the Mendel's delivery truck, so they're both fine. I was worried here that
this is where Agatha dies.
I was worried she was going to die
here.
And then the painting's still hanging there, and she's like, "There's something in the painting."
Yeah. You can just see the confidential envelope. And they sit down in, like, the dining hall, and Edward Norton opens it and reads it. He's got everybody in handcuffs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's found that this is the moment where we find out Madame D is the owner of the hotel. And in the event of her murder, everything she owns goes to Gustav. And since they prove that she was murdered by her own son, Gustav has it all. He's got the hotel. He's got all of her money. Everything is his.
And this fantastic, priceless painting.
Yes, and the painting. He decides basically to step down as the concierge. He's just going to live as a rich guy now. Zero becomes the concierge for the hotel. He and Agatha get married, and Gustav officiates, which he asked if he could do earlier in the film.
Yeah.
There's some scene where he's interviewing Agatha. I believe we missed earlier in the movie.
Yeah, we did. That's when he starts to don't flirt with her.
Yeah. Zero's like, "Don't flirt with her."
Ah, yes.
And he asks her, he's like, "Is he flirting with you?" And she goes, "A little bit."
He's like, "I like her."
Yeah. I like that in that moment he was like trying to make sure that she was good enough for his lobby boy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have no two-bit woman for my lobby boy.
That's right.
Do we also miss a scene where Zero's visiting Agatha in her parents' house in the bed? Is that when he asked her to go in to get the painting?
She's in Mendel's. I was actually going to bring that up.
Oh, yeah.
And then they pop up through the roof.
That's like right before he goes to rescue.
Yeah. She was trying to make her an accomplice in that moment. She was like, "No, I don't steal art. I'm not doing that.
She's like, "I'm not going to fence it."
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because he also gave her the instructions on where to find it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He goes, "The code's small, you might need a magnifying glass to read it."
Mm-hmm. Right. And then but later I just like does. How they, like, pop it, like, out through the roof, and then there's just him in the background running across the rooftops.
Like. Yeah,
like, jump from one to the other.
Yeah. Like fucking Daredevil.
And I was like, "That's that fucking young love right there." He really loves this girl. Yeah. That son of a bitch is running across rooftops and jumping from one to the other one, because I would not do that shit myself.
Mm-hmm. He also was popping open the hatch on the roof with a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I thought that would be important somehow later, but it wasn't.
Yeah, just so he could keep it open.
Yeah.
That's that young love right there.
But yeah, she's
jumping across rooftops.
I forgot about him trying to convince her to help steal the painting.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, "Just take it anyway."
Yeah, just take it anyway. And he throws it at her as he's leaving through the rafters.
Fucking men. Not knowing how to accept a no.
So sometime later, after Zero and Agatha are married, Zero now has his own real mustache. They're riding on this train with Gustav. They stop again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he asks again, why are we stopping at a barley field again? But this time it's the soldiers in black. Mm-hmm. And also, very importantly, the whole entirety of this scene is black and white.
Yeah, randomly. Like, I was like, why is it randomly black and white? Because, like, it starts out in color, and then it goes into black and white.
No, I think as soon as this scene starts, it's black and white.
Okay.
As soon as it cuts to the three of them in the train car.
Okay.
And I think because this is not supposed to be a funny moment, what's about to happen here. This is, like, the darkest moment of the movie, I'd say.
I would agree.
So they just like earlier in the film, when the soldiers came on, it's the exact same thing, except for now it's the Nazi stand-ins. And they want to look at their papers, they're fine, and Zero still has the...
motorcycle.
Zero still has the motorcycle that drove by our house. So Zero still has that temporary little like permission slip, the free and unmolested travel that mm-hmm. Edward Norton gave him earlier.
Gustav.
No, Edward Norton gave
Edward
it.
Norton gave
yeah,
it.
Norton gave it to Zero it. Earlier.
Yeah, but Gustav had it.
Gustav has it. Yeah. Yes.
Rip
they
it
just
up.
Rip it. He goes, oh, this is the first time meeting one of the death squads. He's still trying to be that playful, polite guy. He's still got that old raggedy work paper. And they tell him, same thing, get up, get outside. Gustav tells him, don't get up. He goes, you're not arresting him. He hasn't done anything wrong. If you do, I'll see you court-martialed and hung by the end of the week or something like that.
Yeah.
And they proceed to hit Zero in the face with the butt of the rifle.
Mm-hmm.
This causes Gustav to go off on him. He throws his little champagne glass on him and he attacks them. It cuts back to old Zero sitting with Arthur. He asks him, he goes, well, what happened? He goes, they shot him. They took him outside and they executed him. And I was his sole heir to everything he had, so it all came to me. The hotel, the money. Basically everything that Madame D leaves Gustav by the end of it, it goes to Zero.
Mm-hmm.
And this part of the movie actually was kind of emotional for me because it really sucked how Gustav went out.
Yeah. It's realistic, but
it is. It is. It not in the storytelling sense, like, fine. It's just I wanted better for him in that way. Like the fact that he was murdered for defending what is essentially his family.
Mm-hmm.
That just sucked.
It sucked in the sense too, because you also find out later in the scene that Agatha died with their infant son as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this man literally lost his family, gained another family, and then have that family die again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he lost Agatha and their son like within 2 years of them having the kid.
Yeah, it was it was a baby.
And the disease that killed them was something that in the 60s timeline or time period, it was something that they could cure with medicine in a week.
Mm-hmm.
But when she got it back in the day, there was nothing they could
do. Nothing they could do.
It was like killing millions at the time.
Yeah. So it's such a kind of a bummer ending to this. Mm-hmm. And that's when we find out that that's why he keeps the hotel around.
For her?
Because I think he doesn't have anything else. He got rid of most of his riches to keep the hotel. Arthur thinks that he's keeping it around for Gustav, but he's like, no, I keep it around for Agatha. It reminds me of her and our life together.
Because he says, I think specifically, he's like, this hotel was not even what Gustav was. He was like, I keep this because this makes me and Agatha were happy here. Mm-hmm. But Gustav was more than just this hotel.
Yeah, and the world Gustav lived in had disappeared before he even came along, he says.
He was like keeping it, like he was keeping the air of it alive, but it wasn't even his world.
Yeah, so, and then the last shot is of the student from the very beginning reading the book by Arthur's headstone.
Yeah, because Arthur, he was like, he intended to come back, but he never made it back before the hotel got destroyed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep. He mentions once he left, that was the last time he ever saw it, back mm-hmm. in 68. So presumably, the two bookends of this film, the girl going to the cemetery and the girl reading the book at the very end, all the characters we meet in this film are dead before the movie even starts.
Yeah. I think it kind of leads to also how the story kind of, the movie flows. It flows like it's a story being told
through someone else's perspective.
Yeah.
This was I think we've all kind of said we liked this movie, but
it's mm-hmm. my favorite we've done so far.
Yeah, but so I have a thing. Would any of you have regretted if you saw this in a theater?
No.
No?
I wouldn't have.
No?
No.
It was very entertaining. It kept your attention. Like, it flowed well.
It felt like I was running the entire time through this film. Like, it doesn't slow down once it gets going.
It doesn't bore you.
Yeah.
No, and it doesn't take long for things to kick off.
Mm-mm. It does a good job to hold your interest.
Yeah. It's a decent little story. The jokes hit.
Yeah.
It's also visually interesting to look at.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of stuff happens, but you never stop and think to yourself, what the hell is happening?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going on in this movie.
Yeah, so this was definitely a good one. It was so much better than Never Been Kissed. Oh my gosh.
We just have to, this is going to become the bash Never Been Kissed podcast.
Mm-hmm. Anybody want to fancy a guess of how much you would have had to pay to see this in theaters back in 2014?
Back in 2014 times. Better days.
$12.50.
I was going to say $15.
$7.
Okay, well, Jeremy won again with that.
What are these matinee prices?
These are the average ticket prices for that year.
Okay.
Oh God.
$8 and 17 cents.
17.
Mm-hmm.
It's an average. It's an average.
Now you're gonna walk into the theater and you're like 8.17. You're like, what the fuck is this?
What is that number?
Because these are averages, not the actual. I walk into my local theater and they con me price.
Right.
Mm.
That being said, I only go to matinees, so.
There you go.
Out your damn mind. You think you're going to catch me at a theater at night?
I don't like a good nighttime show.
People in there doing foul shit.
All right, so for next week, I'm sorry, not next week, in 2 weeks, we are going to be doing an episode on Minority Report, which Jeremy picked for that one. I haven't seen that in a very long time.
I've never seen it. Is that the one with Tom Cruise?
Yep. Yeah.
I've seen the show with Megan Good.
It's Tom Cruise.
It's Tom Cruise show. And Colin Farrell, Max von Sydow.
Oh.
I remember it not being that great when I watched it as a kid, but I'll have to rewatch it in a few weeks.
It feels like a dad movie.
He's a dad in the movie.
To read it and see if you like that better. It's only 30 pages.
Oh.
All right. So in 2 weeks, our next episode, everyone get ready for Minority Report. This week was Grand Budapest Hotel. I hope everybody enjoyed it. I've been Adam.
I'm Erica.
I'm Etta.
I'm Jeremy.
We've been getting to the theater. You guys have a good one.